So, Chef Vineet, welcome to the Maz Hakim podcast.
Thank you for having me here, Maz.
I need to call you sir, right? You've been knighted.
No, just Chef Vineet. Oh, Vineet is fine.
Okay.
No formalities here.
Tell me about that process of being knighted. How do you get knighted? And also, what does that feel like?
It was a surprise that we got knighted, or we were given the award as an MBE. And I don't know how it happens, to be very honest, because I filled no forms at all. Okay. I was just told 10 days, that was 21st of December, mm-hmm. 2022, I was told that I had a call actually from His Majesty's Trade Commissioner in Dubai. And I was at home and he called me and said, are you seated? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, I've got some news for you. And I said, okay, I thought maybe some government work,
yeah,
which I've been doing for so many years. And he says, His Majesty wants to award you with an MBE. He said, wow, would you accept it? And I burst out laughing. And I said, what do you mean accept it? I said, who in his state of mind would actually say no to an award like that? He said, no, but I need to have an answer, yes or no. I said, yes, of course, yes.
Wow.
And then it went on a few cordial things. And he said, I am so happy for you, especially to have got the MBE. It's King Charles First List. And it's such an honor to have you on that. And we feel very special because you've done so much for the country here and you're based in Dubai most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel? And I said, I have no clue. I said, it was something out of the blue. I didn't know what to say or what to expect. And it came literally like a huge surprise. And then he says, is it an embargo? You can't tell anybody for the next 10 days.
And you wanted to explain.
And I said, at least my wife and my boys, I have to tell them. He said, yes, but no media, no press, no friends, nothing at all. So for 10 days, we had to keep shut. And we were traveling to Antarctica to do a cook-off at the guest chef on the cruise lines for New Year. And on the 30th, at late night, 10:30, they announced it saying the list came out. And we were in Antarctica when it was announced. Only then could we actually say that to the public. So it was an amazing New Year for us, a great gift to start 2023.
And what's the process of when you get knighted? Do you get, do you get given something or do you get a certificate?
Yes.
Do you make a speech?
You get a scroll. You get a scroll. You're called to the Buckingham Palace.
Okay.
So there's a big process you have to go through. And you can take three guests with you. So my wife and my two boys, they're rather men right now. So we all went down to Buckingham Palace and you don't know who's going to give you the honor.
Okay.
So you get a scroll given to you in advance, which says signed by King Charles,
mm-hmm.
that they want to offer that to you, and they give the whole thing given to you, which you keep. But when you actually go for the ceremony, you don't know who's going to give it to you. It's either him, Prince William, or Princess Anne. So when we go to the Buckingham Palace, we saw the flag on full mast, and we said, oh, King is in residence. So you never know. Until you don't get inside the room, I mean, there are four or five different rooms where they place you in, and they call you in an order. And they only tell you it when the screen goes live, the camera goes live in that room, which is a different room altogether, and you can watch it on television. So there's a protocol of how do you approach His Majesty, how do you bow down, how do you walk up, and how they tell you. They explain that to you, there's a process for everyone to follow.
Right.
That is when you actually get to see who goes on the podium to give the medal.
Wow.
And then you see is King Charles. And we were so lucky because he does very few of these now.
Wow.
So we are really honored to have him give it to us.
What an absolute honor. You mentioned earlier you went to Antarctica. What were you doing in Antarctica?
I have been very fortunate. I have cooked in one of the highest places in the world, at Everest Base Camp, right till the furthest point in the world, which is Antarctica and the Arctic. So we were actually a guest chef on a cruise line.
Okay.
Where we were cooking for ultra high net worth individuals who were there to cook an Indian meal for them.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of them happened to be British and Indians,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to have an Indian meal served to them. So it was an 11-day cruise where we had to make a breakfast. Then we had to have a tea at 11. Then we had a lunch service. Then we had an afternoon tea. And then we had to have dinner. And this is for 150 guests. So it was non-stop for us. It was really non-stop. But we got a chance to go around Antarctica. We got to go onto the land, see the penguins, see the whales, and to see the various natural fauna. And it is just stunning. It is beautiful. The sun never sets.
Yes.
And it is so nice. At 4 in the morning, you look outside at the golden dusk and you see the huge landmass of the Antarctica, and it's peaceful, it's silent.
Wow. And what does it feel like cooking in that sort of environment? And do you, I guess, change your dishes depending on the weather?
Yes, it makes a big difference. Don't forget, these are captive audience and you can't cook on land. You can only cook on the cruise.
Oh, right.
You cannot take any food into the land.
Okay.
It's totally prohibited.
Okay.
So you have to cook everything. And although you carry most of the stuff with you, it is so freezing cold. You know, it is sub-zero. Even the kitchens are quite cold, and the fridge are anyway going to be cold. So any green herbs are gone by day number two, day three. Nothing is gone. It's all leaves, all gone. So you end up doing all your proteins. You end up doing your lentils. You end up doing your stews. You end up doing your rice preparations. But what they want is a hearty, warm meal.
Mm-hmm.
And your three course, you know, for every meal to structure in such a way that in those 11 days, you don't get bored. It's not an easy task.
That's incredible. Yeah. I'm always curious. Does a Michelin star chef cook for himself when he gets home? Do you cook Michelin star quality when you get home?
I think it goes into your DNA in many shapes and forms. You know, when the kids were small, my wife is a good cook also, and she would make homemade chicken nuggets or fish fingers and stuff like those. So, you know, as a mom, you just fry your nuggets or you bake something, you put it onto a plate and you give a little crisp or something on the side with some tomato ketchup.
Yeah.
But when it comes to me as being a chef, then the chicken nuggets have to be aligned like a stack,
like a
Jenga. The tomato ketchup has to be dotted up and slight pull over it. And the little bowls of fries have to be arranged on the side. It just comes very naturally. But yeah, even when I cook at home, you always are the chef. You can't take that away. So the whole process of cooking comes in a way that whatever you do, you will serve it in a very kind of a different fashion. You can't just slap food on a plate. It doesn't work for a chef.
Right.
Even if it's off duty at home. And I love to cook at home because for me, cooking is very relaxing, very therapeutic. I enjoy to cook at home. It's because you're cooking for people you love. And when you cook for people you love and you cook out of love, it is the best food you can ever get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we always say the best cooks in the world are not men. They're actually women.
Wow.
Because they cook out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the key. As long as you can do any profession you like yourselves, on air as such,
yes.
If it is in passion, it all comes out well.
So in Ayurveda, there's also a belief that you ingest the cook's energy.
Yes, do.
And I want to know about that. Do you believe that when you cook something, your energy sort of goes into that?
It does. I think there is a positive energy which comes through while you cook because you're cooking, you know. If you are cooking literally out of as a professional without any care, and the food is very mediocre, I can promise you. And you get tons of restaurants serving food which is very mediocre because there is no effort going into it.
Yeah.
But a simple cafe can make you the most delicious omelette and a piece of toast if it's done with a lot of care and passion. It shows. It shows onto the plate. It shows onto the flavors.
Mm-hmm.
It shows onto the seasoning which you give to your guest. And the best compliment you can ever get is not getting a Michelin star or getting any awards. It is your happy guest going with a happy belly every evening or every service you do.
Wow.
Because that, for me, is the biggest satisfaction, the biggest smile on my diner's face.
Mm-hmm.
And always say, when you come to our restaurants and you leave with one single happy memory, my job is done.
Wow. That's so beautiful. I love that. So Chef Vineet, a lot of chefs nowadays post the bills of their guests online. And you have restaurant Michelin star restaurants all around the world. Have you ever done that? Have you posted anything or how much your guests have spent?
No, never. I think somebody who spends you 20 dirhams, somebody who spends you 1,000 dirhams, they are guests for you.
Yeah.
We never flaunt that. I think that kind of show of attitude is not what we believe in. I think you need to have that humbleness in yourself. That, you know, everyone who walks through the door is a VIP. Everyone has to be treated like a king and has to be looked after. I mean, that is our ethos. We strongly believe in trying to source the best produce and to look after the guests. And I think that purely comes to my culture from where I come back in India. It is about looking after the people who are around you. And even the team we have around us, you know, when you walk into the restaurant, you don't have to go and first have a look at the manager. I first pass by the pot wash and wish the pot wash guy. Or the cleaner, because they are as important as my manager is. And they all become your family eventually. And, you know, we so heavily invest into training our people that they have stayed with us for so many years.
Wow.
We treat them with respect. We look after them.
Mm-hmm.
We give them a great working space. And, you know, people are happy working for us.
Yeah. You mentioned your heritage. You're of Indian heritage. And when you first started off in your journey, you faced a little bit of difficulty, right, when you were cooking Indian food.
I did.
And there was a little bit of backlash on you were trying to make it into a fusion or deconstruct it a little bit. Tell me about that.
My journey way back, I went into industry in 85. I mean, at that stage, I was a lost soul. I wanted to be a pilot. And I was turned down saying, I'm too short to be a pilot. Mm-hmm. So I went to textile designing school because my father was into cotton industry. Mm-hmm. And the cotton industry was not my cup of chai. It just did not work for me. So I went to hotel school. And I said, in those days, I said, I want to be a barman and make cocktails and drinks. So I applied for a bar training at the hotel. And I was turned down saying, I'm too short to stand behind a bar counter. The only place where you can work is where nobody sees you is the kitchen. And I said, okay, I'll go in the kitchen. I'll work there for a week or 2 weeks, wiggle my way out, go into banquets or room service and get into service.
Yeah.
I wanted to serve people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking into the hotel in the kitchen there and falling in love with it.
Wow.
I had not seen such an immaculately run kitchen, so much discipline at the Oberoi hotels in India, in Bombay,
yes.
that I said, I want to now learn to cook. And I was just 17. And I can promise you and tell you, Maz, I spent almost 3 months of my summer training without the day off. Doing 17, 18 hours a day just because I wanted to learn.
Mm.
I was just hungry for knowledge. And I wanted to learn to cook. And till this date, I still want to cook. I still want to learn. I still want to get in the kitchen and get my hands dirty. Because that gives me the most satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so beautiful. And did you face a little bit of backlash in India with because you wanted to change some of the dishes, right?
Yes.
And you know, a lot of people like to stick to tradition.
I mean, they were purists. And there still are people who are very purists who like things done a certain way. But as a young person of 17, 19, and 20, when you're working there, you know, you're looking at things around you, you begin to question. And I always had a question mark. I was very inquisitive. Why do you add this? Why do you add so much oil? Why do you add 30 spice powders? You can't taste them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no answer. So I used to start cleaning up the dishes in some way, making a bit lighter, less fat, less greasy, less oily.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, we had a lot of cabin crew from airlines from the Far East who would come. Now, Far East people wanted a lot of fish and seafood and vegetables. So they would request, can we have some scallops because you're on the ocean, Indian Ocean in Bombay, can we get some crab or some fish from there, which is very lightly done. And I used to start playing around with local fish, and they would enjoy it. But I was getting told off because it was not part of the menu. Mm. There was extra work for the purchasing and the storekeeper, and nobody wants to do that. So they should get complaints saying, oh, why is he ordering all this stuff?
Yes.
And then it becomes a comparison in the hotel because this restaurant of ours does well compared to the other French restaurants. And it came to a stage where I still remember the French chef was doing his cuisine,
mm-hmm.
and he did a roast duck, and he put a duck jus with mango chutney, and people were applauding him and saying, oh, look at that, he's so clever. And I turned back as a young kid of 21 and said, what rubbish is this? I said, I've been trying to change myself, and I've been told off as an Indian chef, and here you have a French chef who's being applauded. And that's when I knew I needed to go.
Yeah, wow.
I had to go. I had to get out of the mindset, and that is when my calling came for UK. And when a calling came for the UK way back in 92, 93, I had four options, Maz. I had Tokyo, I had Bangkok, I had Dubai, and I had London. And I chose London. Not for anything else, but because London used to rain all the time.
Yes.
It was cold weather, and it had Heathrow Airport.
Yeah.
And I loved aeroplanes. So that was my catch, nothing else. That is why I went to London.
You like the rain and Heathrow.
I love the cold weather, I love the rain, and I could watch the Concorde.
Wow.
So that is how my journey in UK began, 93.
And if someone's listening now and they're sort of going through a crossroads in their life, how do you find out what your calling is?
I think it falls into place. I think God always watches on top. As long as you have to believe in yourself first, and you got to keep on pursuing that nonstop, keep on repeating it, keep practicing, keep on, never give up. That is an attitude you have to have. You can just not give up. You have to have a strong inner belief in yourself that what you're doing is correct. And then you just go on and your path will open up. There is a light end of the tunnel. It will come through.
Mm-hmm.
But it is hard work. You know, even at this stage, I mean, 40 years down the line, the business working there, I still do the hours. I still fly around. I still go to my restaurant. I look after my guests. I look after my team. I look after my restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It is become your DNA. And each time you look at it, how can I make it better? how can I tweak a certain dish? You know, if you go back and revisit a restaurant in 3 months, 6 months, and look at a menu and says, nah, it can get better. What do I do? Maybe change the garnish, add a certain flavor to a dish. Mm-hmm. How can I make it better? Maybe it needs a better kind of silverware or a crockery. So let's design something. Can we do that? Mm-hmm. Work on that. So it's a constant process. And we believe in having a small setup. So it's my wife and I who are into it, and we are very hands-on in our approach. So everything we do is very passionate. It's very bespoke. So mm-hmm. we only have a few restaurants. It's not like a McDonald's, you have thousands of restaurants.
Exactly.
We only got 11. Mm-hmm. But that is what we want to look after. Each one for us is our home, is a little jewel. And we keep on polishing it every time. Mm-hmm. So never really give up, keep on, but believe in yourself.
And if someone is not, I mean, I don't cook enough, to be honest. I really should. I want to. The desire is there to cook. But how can somebody really level up their cooking at home? Like, what are some ingredients?
Don't cook at home. Come to our restaurant. Oh, right. Or we're going to go bus mass. There is no point. No, I think for people to cook at home, I think you don't cook for yourself, most importantly. I mean, you do cook.
Yes.
But you cook for people around you. Uh-huh. So if you have family at home, you got your children there, you got your husband or your parents or your brothers, sisters, you always try and do things for them which they like to eat mm-hmm. and what they enjoy the most or the particular ingredient. So you play with that. But always try and do a little twist to it. It is still a potato, but it's got a little addition of a little herb or a little spice or a little garnish on it and a little okay. way, a different way of cooking it. Mm-hmm. Get them entangled in the whole process. Make them interested. Get them to be inquisitive, especially young children, because they have very open minds. For the jaded palate, of course, a bit more difficult. But again, you know, you have to gently start pushing things around. And you can do it very easily with family. You can coax them into things which they would normally not eat, or they should be rather eating, staying away from sweets. So how do you make that light? You know, cut the sugars down, cut the mm-hmm. fats down, cut the creams down.
Yes.
A little more healthier, homemade butters to go in, little garnishes, you know, all that stuff.
Homemade butter?
Yes, homemade butters.
Wow.
Not just butter out of dairy, but, you know, cashew butter, hazelnut butter, pistachio butter, pine nut butter. You know, all these things are very easy to make at home. You go and buy a jar from the market, it costs a lot of money. But, you know, you take hazelnuts, for example, and you roast it. You put it into a little blender, a little bit of olive oil, and just whizz it up. You get a fantastic kind of
a butter. That's a butter.
That's it. Put that onto a piece of toast. It's high protein.
Oh, wow.
It's very good for you. Same thing with pistachios, pine nuts, Brazilian nuts, pecan nuts, walnuts. It's endless.
Wow.
Making homemade hummus, for example, you know. I mean, we did a dish yesterday for our YouTube channel, and all we did was we had cauliflower lying in the house, and we were filming, and we said, okay, let's do an oven roasted cauliflower. And with the trimming, we blanched it with some salt and some turmeric to give it a yellow color. Mm-hmm. Put it into a jar with some canned chickpeas, some tahina, a little garlic, a little bit of paprika, and olive oil and salt, lemon juice. Whizz it up. It's a cauliflower hummus. How nice is that to have? You can put edamame in that. You can put beetroot in that. You can put peas in that. You can put spinach in that. You can put za'atar in that. You know, it's endless.
So if someone is making a shawarma at home, for example, how would you make that Michelin style? How would you make it really level up?
Oh, the most important key is actually in the marinating of the chicken. How do you marinate the chicken the first? Because that has the main showcase, that is the chicken in that for the shawarma. So you flavor it. So when I'm making shawarma at home, you know, I'm going to add a little bit of garlic paste, a bit of ginger paste, a little bit of lemon juice as the first marinade. Now, what happens the first marinade is when you add it into a protein like a chicken mm-hmm. or a piece of red meat, it opens up the pores. So as soon as the pores open up, you let it rest for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you add your secondary flavoring, and that could be anything. It could be sumac in that, it could be paprika, it could be any herb you want to add. Mm-hmm. Now, the key is in the first marinade always, because that opens up the pores and helps you impart more flavors. Most people take a chicken breast, slice it up or whatever, add all the powders and keep them in the fridge. Biggest mistake. You leave it outside for at least an hour or two, and then goes into a fridge for 6 hours to marinate. Then you cook it. Then you slice it. Then you can add in your onions. You can add your garlic mayo. You can add harissa if you want to add. You want mm-hmm. to add a mustard sauce. If you like a chili mayo, you add a chili mayo. But the crunches has to come through with the vegetables. The onions have to be sliced. Has to be red onions, not the white onions, okay. not the brown onions. Mm-hmm. But they are sharp. So the Indian onions work very well, the red ones. Then you add in your julienne of your cooked chicken. You add any dressing you want, and you roll it up. It goes into the panini machine. You press it down, and you get a fantastic shawarma. Easy. as easy as that.
Sounds a bit complicated. What about hummus and carrots? How would you make that, if you were serving it, how would you make that look, you know, Michelin?
I would take carrots and I'd do it probably three different ways or four different ways.
Okay.
So, for example, I will take the carrot trimmings. I want to actually blanch them in a bit of salt and maybe a bit of fennel seeds if I have to. So fennel and carrots goes quite well.
Yes.
Then you cool that down and you make your own homemade hummus. So you add in your chickpeas, you add in your tahina, you add some garlic. If you like a kick in that, you add paprika or a green chili, olive oil, lemon juice is very important. Whisk it up. Now also when you make hummus, you should add a little bit of ice in that. Because when you blitz it with ice instead of just warm water or normal water, it keeps the temperature down and it comes out very, very smooth. So that's a trick I would always recommend, putting a small cube of ice while you're blitzing it. It doesn't heat up the hummus, so you don't discolor. And you can also add a carrot on that stage. So you get a nice kind of an orange-colored carrot. Now, what you can also do is you can take the carrots, you can peel them off, and sometimes you dehydrate the peels into a low oven.
Okay.
So they become dry. And then you can sprinkle some chili powder or chili flakes to give it some kind of a seasoning flavoring on them as a garnish. And the carrot itself, you basically take it into a roasting pan. You add some olive oil, add some crushed garlic, add some crushed ginger, maybe add some rosemary, and put them in the oven at around 180 degrees centigrade, 350 degrees Fahrenheit for a good 12 to 14 minutes till they become nice and caramelized. At the last stages of the carrot, you add a little bit of honey.
Oh,
or a little bit of maple syrup on it.
Wow.
And then it goes back in the oven, take it off, sprinkle some sea salt, and it goes on top of your hummus. Your dehydrated carrots goes on top, and voila. There you have it.
Wow, that my mind has just exploded.
Simple dishes, but again, very complex in flavors. It's technique.
It's technique.
It's all about technique.
And what about like a kadak? Is there a way to make that a little bit more Michelin?
The classic way of having kadak is basically boiled tea.
Yes.
It's black tea, which you boil with cardamom.
Uh-huh.
And when you boil it with cardamom, you have to have the black. Even the tea leaves which you use are not your normal tea leaves. They're not like your long leaf teas or a Darjeeling or an Assam.
Okay.
It is called the bhusa or the trimmings, which are very fine round ones. So if you go down to the supermarket, you get the yellow label or the red label. And they work extremely well. Lipton's.
Yes, they work
well. I'm not plugging a brand here. I'm not endorsing it, but that tea works quite well. It's got good tannins, it's got good flavor. It boils quite well.
Okay.
And then you need to add condensed milk into it to give it a slight sweetness and the creaminess. Now, when we make tea in our restaurant, we do it slightly differently. So when I make the tea in a restaurant, when we make our own kadak, we take a green cardamom and we take fresh ginger. We put it into a mortar and pestle and we crush it. We literally pound it till they get crushed. Now as they crush, the ginger releases juice and the cardamom has got natural oils in the seeds. They are imparted into the bowl of the mortar and pestle.
Yes.
So you boil your tea and then you also add ginger and you also add the green cardamom in it and bring it to a boil. So that starts the process of infusing the chai or the kadak. Then you add in full fat milk and let that cook for a while so the color release of the tea into the milk. So you get the kind of a wonderful, rich tan color of the chai or the kadak.
That's where the color comes from.
That's where the color comes from. And then if you want to add a sweetness, you add a little bit of condensed milk or you skip it. And if you want to get more adventurous, then you also make a kadak masala or a chai masala, which is a spice powder. Now, spice powder can have things like a cinnamon, it can have cloves, it can have black cardamom, it can have a small amount of a nutmeg, very tiny one nutmeg is very strong. And these are all roasted and ground and kept into an airtight container. And you add a little pinch into your kadak at the last.
Wow.
Before you take it off the heat. And then you let the tea rest for 3 to 4 minutes for flavors to infuse, along with the tea in that, and then you strain it out.
Wow.
And you enjoy your kadak.
Oh, so good. My mouth is watering, Chef Anita. So tell me about your restaurants in Dubai.
Dubai, we have two restaurants here. And there's a small story about Dubai. I actually came here in 2004 to have a look. And I was invited to come and look at the new hotel being built. And I stayed at the Royal Meridian in JBR. And in those days, there was no Palm. There was hardly anything JBR. There was no Marina. There was no JLT.
Yeah.
And we walked on the sand 4 or 5 minutes to get to this building being constructed in the so-called Marina. It was the first building being made, the Grosvenor House. And we stood at the lobby level and they said, this is a plan and this is your restaurant where we plan to have you. And I looked at them and I said, who's going to come here? It's in the middle of nowhere. And they said, it'll happen. It is building up. You know, this is 2004. And we went through the whole process. And there were two things which really caught my eye. And the reason why I said yes to open in Dubai was, firstly, it was backed by Sheikh Ahmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I love airlines, so I loved Emirates.
Yeah.
So there was a connection. I knew it was a strong backing. And the general manager was Pam Wilby from the UK.
Mm.
And so I knew she understood what we wanted. And we knew we had the backing and the support. So
Yes. Because
of her backing and support, I think it stayed for so long, 19 years here. That is how our journey began. So Indigo by Vinita, the Grosvenor House, was one of the first Indian restaurants to open up into a five-star hotel.
Wow.
I mean, you had a couple in Dera, in the old part of Dubai, but nothing on this side, and nothing of the kind of a quality and kind of sophistication which we offer, or the finesse. And I remember everybody said, it's not going to work. You can have a meal for 10 dirhams in Dera and Dubai. Why would they come to you all the way, spend half an hour, 45 minutes to come and drive to have a meal for 250 dirhams? And I said, it'll come. It's been 19 years.
Wow.
It is still full every night. So no, it is just because of the people behind it, the love we have got from the locals here. And I think it's very important that when you actually make things into a new city, especially like Dubai, which has been booming for the past so many years,
mm-hmm.
you know, it keeps changing so fast.
Yes.
It is consistency. And most importantly, you look after your guest. And we very proudly say that majority of the guests are Westerners, but there's a very large chunk of locals who come and dine with us, especially families. And that's very important for us because they are the women who are coming with their children, and they feel comfortable and they come back. So we had that for 19 years. The second restaurant is India by Vineet at the Royal Meridian in JBR,
mm-hmm.
which is our take on very simple, casual, street side cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And again, being a resort, you know, the guest profile is literally they're more relaxed, there's more family oriented. They come in the flip-flop shorts and t-shirts and swimwear, and they want to have a meal, and they're welcome. So although the same parent company, literally a kilometer apart, but very different restaurants. And Touchwood, you know, both of them have been phenomenal. I think in many ways, we have actually opened doors for a lot more chefs from, not just from India, but also from Europe, to actually have come down here into Dubai
mm-hmm.
and have restaurants here. When I came in 2005, and when we opened the restaurant, there were only two British chefs. It was Gordon Ramsay and myself.
Wow.
There were just two of us
mm-hmm.
into a five-star hotel. And if you look at it now, you know, you got so many British chefs here. You got so many chefs from around the world who are flocking to come to Dubai, because Dubai is like a magnet.
Yeah.
You know, it's attracting probably one of the best talents around the world to come to this place and have the restaurants and mm-hmm. their businesses. So yeah, I think this is amazing.
We're very generous with our portions in Dubai, our food portions.
Yes, and I think that's the Middle Eastern culture here.
Yeah.
You know, they love to showcase a lot more. So the portions are quite large. Unlike when we had in Geneva or in London, the portions are very tiny because that's the way they eat. But the ethos here is very different for the Middle Eastern, from the Arabic point of view, because for them it's about sharing, showing their love.
Yes.
It's about their culture. The same thing goes back to us in India, or from where you come in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
You will never serve a small piece of a meat. It will have to be large portions or literally platters of food being served to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically balance between the two. So you'll have a tasting menu in the restaurant where you are composing of 7 to 9 courses, where you can have an elaborate meal for 2.5-3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a journey of flavors and spices. Or you can have a straight on 2-course meal or 3-course meal, and you can share with your friends and family. So we blend both together. And I think you have to respect that culture
mm-hmm.
or where you are. So every restaurant we have is tailored around the area where we are. It is not about the way I like to eat as a chef. It is about the way you like to eat as a guest. And if I can satisfy your ego and mm-hmm. you can come back, my job is done.
What's some of your favorite foods?
I love simple food.
Mm-hmm.
I love clean food. I love simple food. I don't love things which are over theatrical as such. And mm-hmm. you see a lot of that actually in Dubai. It is fizzling off. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
The drama cuisine doesn't really work for me much. I like full-on flavors. I like straightforward stuff. Can be smaller portion. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the impact. But most importantly, it is a produce. Or when you source good produce, you don't do much to it. Because a piece of lobster is a piece of lobster. A piece of lamb is a piece of lamb. A piece of cauliflower is a piece of cauliflower. If you can treat that well and cook it perfectly, that's all you want.
That's so beautiful. And if you could, so Dubai has so many beautiful landmarks. If you could cook a meal to represent, say, the Burj Al Arab, what would you cook?
Oh, I would love to cook at the helipad. firstly.
Yes.
And serve a beautiful, wonderful meal there.
Yes.
And that would be a meal based on a composition of Emirati food and my background being Indian British. So mm-hmm. I would take, because you are sitting on a helipad, you are overlooking the beautiful ocean there around you and the beautiful skyline of Dubai.
Yes.
You want things to be peaks and troughs. It's like a musical note.
Wow.
So if you sit in there and you're looking at the landscape and you see the Burj Khalifa, you want something vertical and pointed. So you want things to represent that in some ways. So you mm-hmm. construct a dish which we have a vertical filling or something which just falls down and breaks down. You have the sand around you. So how do you use the sand? So you would use a wheat flour, for example, and you make a little crumble. And you put them on a base. And
it's
then
so poetic.
The food is poetic.
Yeah.
And you extract those. You have the aqua around you. You have the water. So you use things like a blue pea flour. And you use a blue pea flour to make something very fragrant and light. So a simple thing like a steamed rice cake.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be shaped like a donut. And you could have flavorings in them, served with a nice piece of lobster around you.
Wow.
And you see Emirati, you have this wonderful lemon they have, the desert truffles they have. And you use that kind of a black lemon, for example, and you make a rice dish out of that, and you flavor that. Za'atar is so much Emirati.
Mm-hmm.
So the za'atar with some sesame, you use that to flavor a piece of bread. Or you use the coffee. And we do a wonderful lamb dish in a restaurant, which is actually an Arabic coffee.
Yeah.
So you use the Emirati coffee with some cardamom, and you flavor that with your lamb chop, and you grill them.
Wow.
And you serve the whole, the sauce you made out of the bones of the lamb with coffee, a bit of a... They have the wonderful dessert they use here, which is called lukmat, which
yes.
is like gulab jamun.
Yeah.
But that flavoring of the molasses which they have, that is used to flavor the coffee with the cardamom, with the lamb. It works so well. And the lukmat on its own can be served as a dessert on a little bit of molds of sand around you made out of the gram flour or the whole wheat flour. It is endless. It
oh
is
my
just
gosh.
Endless.
And my mouth is watering. What about the Burj Khalifa? What would you cook for the Burj Khalifa?
Oh, if you look at a Burj Khalifa, it is a vertical tower. You
yes.
know, what do you do with the vertical tower? You want something to really fly high. So you want flavors to be very impactful. So you would do shards of chocolate, for example. So I would love to do a little kulfi or an ice cream, which is like a cone shape.
Yes.
And I would wrap it up with the chocolate, which has been sprayed with kind of a silver finish to it. Because, you know, it's got this kind of silver outing around it.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a complete tower. But it's a mystery. If you don't get to the bottom, you don't know what is inside there. And right at the bottom of that would be a nice piece of chocolate with a very strong flavor. And I would think coffee would work quite well to finish a meal.
Yes.
So you finish on a little blast. But as it melts down and you take off the peels of the Khalifa and you come down, you have a wonderful finish. And maybe I put a little small, tiny lukmat.
Yeah,
with some sesame inside.
Uh-huh.
That would work very well.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. So many delicious thoughts right now. And Chef Vineet, I know we're not meant to cook at home. And we're supposed to come to your restaurant.
No, you can't cook at home. Don't get me wrong.
What are some ingredients that everyone should have in their kitchen to really level up some of their food?
I think you got to have things which are quite eaten at your homes, for example. So if you are a home household which is vegetarian or a pescatarian, for example, then you should have some fresh fish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with fresh fish, what do you add? You know, you add, look at an Indian angle to it, then you would add some ginger, you would add some curry leaves, you would add some mustard seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So in my home, in my spice laundry, in my spice box, which I have, there are a few basic spices. So there's the mustard seeds, there's the cumin,
mm-hmm.
there is a fennel, there's some green cardamom, and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have four basic powders. So I've got red chili powder.
Yes.
For the extra kick, I've got turmeric powder for the color. I've got cumin and coriander powder. So it depends upon the dish, what I want to cook, I would have that. But what I would also have on the side is lots of fresh herbs, coriander, mint, basil, rosemary, za'atar in season when I get them, lime.
Mm.
Lime and lemon are a great combination to have in your food. You finish it off with a very large, with a nice squeeze of your lime on a piece of fish which has been lightly cooked.
Yes.
Rice, very important to have, because it's very staple. Who doesn't like rice?
Yeah.
And rice is best cooked if it's a day old. And we always say, we do a love dish at
mm-hmm.
home. I mean, also go to in the restaurant. Now, people say, what is a love dish? Now, love dish basically means leftover vegetables, etc. L-O-V-E. So all your leftover vegetables and the rice are tossed together to get amazing flavor.
Wow.
So, you know, you have steamed rice at home. You have some vegetables here. You have leftover protein. Little oil in the pan, a little curry leaf, a little garlic, lightly salted, a little bit of chili to go in if you like it spicy. Throw in some onion, throw in your protein,
mm-hmm.
lightly saute it, and add the rice. And lastly, seasoning, lemon juice, and coriander.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the most flavorful rice dish, literally in a jiffy.
Wow. There's different schools of thought on coriander.
Mm-hmm.
I love it, but some of my friends don't like it.
I agree with that. A lot of people, the issue with that is, you know, and I blame Indian restaurants for that, they overcook the coriander. Coriander is, and mint and basil are such light herbs, you don't really cook them.
Mm-hmm.
You only add them once the dish is ready. You sprinkle it and it's removed from the heat. And you just stir it in. You never cook fresh herbs.
Oh, you don't?
The chlorophyll is so light in that. You know, it mm-hmm. gets lost. It gets discolored. Doesn't look nice. The freshness must come through. So when you add basil into your pasta, for example, you don't cook from the first stage of adding basil in with your garlic and your onions and your tomatoes. You put it right at the last. The same is with coriander.
Mm-hmm.
So people out there who don't like coriander, I would say gently add it once the dish is cooked and outside of the heat into a bowl, sprinkle coriander and then fold it in. You will see a marked difference in your produce. If you still don't like coriander, skip it altogether. Add basil or add sage or thyme or rosemary, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But coriander is a very, very gentle herb. It needs to be handled with care.
Who's your most interesting, do you have an interesting story for someone, VIP, that you've cooked for?
Of course, there's so many. There are so many, and most of them are very, very embarrassing. Because we are into a studio and we have music around us, I'll tell you a story about this gentleman. This is way back 93, 94. I'd just gone to London then. And on my off day, I should go to study in the hotel school.
Okay.
It was once a week on a Wednesday. And it would get over by 4:30. So I came back to the restaurant and we opened at 6. So I just got in and my boss was sitting there with a couple there. And he said, oh, why don't you come and join us for a cup of tea? Because it was 6:15, 6:30. I said, sure, I should live in the same building. So I sat with them and they ordered some food. I had my cup of tea. I was sitting with them and the guy asked me, he said, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm the chef here. I cook here. He said, oh, wonderful. We love your food. I asked him, what do you do? He said, oh, I play the guitar. I said, oh, good. And I sat with him for half an hour, had my cup of tea. He's having his meal. And I said, well, I got up and said, good luck with your guitar career. And he said, good luck with your cooking. And the man, if you look at him, he was into very scruffy looking, freckle face, very unkempt, just t-shirt and jeans, very casual. And that was it. So I went off. I come to work next day and my boss says, the guy yesterday, you wished for the guitar, you know who it was? I said, I've got no idea. Some friends of yours. That was Bryan Adams.
Oh my God.
I had no clue. And I loved his music.
Yeah.
But I never seen him up and close. And he's all tidied up on the camera. His hair is done. Everything is done. And he came very scruffy. He came totally like a very normal person. And he was a regular. He came for years.
Wow.
And he used to tease me. He said, I'm still playing my guitar. And I said, I'm still playing my...
You're like,
cooking.
Good luck. I wish you well.
I wish you well. So I had many of these embarrassing moments in my life.
What about recently? Have you cooked for anyone recently?
I did. I cooked last week for Ed Sheeran
in
Bahrain. I did.
Really?
And it was such a nice... I love his music. And he's a great guy. He's a funny guy. And we'd gone to see his concert. We were given tickets. We had the best seats in the house to watch him.
Wow.
And then we were cooking for him the next day on a private evening, on a private affair. And he was wonderful. I just wish he was strumming a few of his guitar and singing a few songs while he dined. But he was a great guest. Very down to earth, very simple guy. He enjoys his food. Very boyish.
Yes.
And full of life.
What did he eat?
We had a 9-course meal.
Wow.
So we were doing a meal and everything was very British in that. So we had a Welsh lamb on the menu. We had Cornish crab cakes with a squidding chutney. We had an Arabic coffee lamb. So we had used Bahraini coffee, but the lamb was from the UK. We have one of our signature dishes, which is the home-smoked tandoori salmon. And we flavored that with spices and cooked them in a tandoor. So we had that on the menu. We had a lobster on the menu, which came from Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff was based around them. The dessert was, again, a blend of Indian and the local flavors. So we did a rasmalai, which is a poached milk dumpling.
Mm-hmm.
And we served that with an ice cream or a kulfi, which is made out of omali, which is classically Middle Eastern.
Yes.
And a small little baklava, but not like a normal baklava. It was like a long pencil stick. And that had a local honey, and it had rose petals, and it had pistachio. So everything what we do is we do it in conjunction with the Great Campaign in the UK. We try and showcase the best of what we have back home in the UK.
Yes.
So great British produce. And I think one of the finest produce you can ever get is from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Because the waters are so well kept, and they track down the produce from where it originates from.
Right.
So you can actually have the entire history or the product sourcing can be done.
Mm-hmm.
which we love to use. So everything is very organic in a way. And when you have great produce to use, you don't do much to it. You add mm-hmm. very simple flavors. Let the flavor of the lamb come through. Let the flavor of the cheeses come through. Let the flavor of the fish come through. And mm-hmm. you know, I mean, turbo is a great fish. We did a turbo on the menu.
Yes.
And that was slightly poached into a sauce made out of kaifir lime leaves, tomatoes, coconut milk, and a hint of garlic and a chili. And it just melts in your mouth. The fish is poached in that wonderful sauce. And you had that with steamed rice, and that's all you need. It is so comforting.
Did Ed Sheeran add tomato sauce to anything? Because he's obsessed with tomato.
No. We didn't get him anywhere near tomato sauce. We had everything was homemade, and I said, no bottles coming out, please.
Yes. Do chefs get offended when guests use... Sometimes I ask for Tabasco, and I'm really afraid that it's going to offend the chef, but I just like the vinegary, spicy taste.
I am not offended at all. You know, end of the day, is you're paying the bucks. You know, if you want to change something, change something. In our restaurant, we don't even keep a salt and pepper or a crude set, but mm-hmm. because our food is so well seasoned.
Yes.
But if somebody asks for more, then obviously give it.
Yes.
And their personal preferences. You know, people come and say, no, we like your food, but can we have it spicier? Can mm-hmm. you do a little hot sauce on the side? And we oblige happily. It is not about me. It's not about the chef. It's about you coming to the restaurant and enjoying mm-hmm. yourself. If I can help you achieve that, mm-hmm. I'll do it most willingly. I'll bend over backwards wherever I can to look after my guest. Because mm-hmm. they come back. Yeah. They always come back.
I would be a terrible chef. I'd be like, okay, table number 7.
No, I mean, they are chefs who are quite egoistic at times and say, that is the way I do my food and nobody touches my food.
Yes.
I mean, it's a different mindset. From where I come, it's a very humble approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we always try to take one of the simplest and the most humble of ingredients and treating in the best manner, because that is so difficult to cook. A simple potato, I promise you, is the most difficult to cook. And you can mess it up very easily. But when you do it correctly, it's the most delicious thing you'll ever eat.
Wow. Chef Vineet, where can we follow you? Where can we visit your restaurants in Dubai?
In Dubai, we have two restaurants here. We have Indigo by Vineet at the Grosvenor House. We have India by Vineet at the Royal Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
So these two are our little babies here, our little jewels in the UAE. And 19 years and 6 years. So it's been a long time for both of them. And besides that, social media always helps out. The Chef Vineet on Instagram, and we have a YouTube channel where we actually try and teach people how to cook very simple things at home. But my Insta page is more of a travel blog of what I am.
Yes.
It's about food, basically, which I love.
Yes. Chef Vineet, it's such an absolute pleasure. I will see you at the restaurant.
Thank you for having me, Maz. Thank you. Take care.